The Gemara tells two very similar versions of a story of Chonyoy, who was the son of Shimon HaTzadik. When Shimon HaTzadik was about to die, he said that Chonyoy, his son, should be the next Kohen Gadol. Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol, and he said that his younger son, Chonyoy, should succeed him in being the next Kohen Gadol. Now, Chonyoy had an older brother called Shimi, and because he was older than him, Chonyoy allowed him to take the position. However, very soon after, Chonyoy regretted that, and he decided to cause some trouble for Shimi, and he tricked him by telling him that the way that he is supposed to perform the service in the Beis HaMikdash is not only by wearing the regular 8 special items of clothing which a Kohen Gadol must wear, but he told him to also wear a certain cloak, which was actually a woman's clothing. And when Shimi went and did this, so Chonyoy told all of the other Kohanim who were there, do you know why he's wearing this? Because he promised a certain woman that he would wear her clothes as soon as he would become Kohen Gadol and serves in the Beis HaMikdash, that he would wear her clothes. This is what Chonyoy did, and the truth is, the Kohanim found out that Chonyoy was actually making this all up, and that he had tricked Shimi, and when they found that out, they wanted to kill Chonyoy. And to cut a long story short, Chonyoy ran away to Alexandria in Egypt. And there he set up and built a replacement Beis HaMikdash, so to speak. And he built a Mizbeach there, and he would offer up korbanos over there. There's an argument whether he offered up the korbanos for the sake of idolatry, or it was actually for the sake of Hashem. But either way, he violated either the prohibition of idolatry, or the prohibition of offering up korbanos outside of the Beis HaMikdash. As soon as the Beis HaMikdash was built in Yerushalayim, it became forbidden to ever bring a korban outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And in fact, the liability for doing so is liability of koris, the extremely severe punishment of being, so to speak, cut off from Hashem. The conclusion of the Gemara seems to be that it was for the sake of Hashem, however, he violated this prohibition of offering up a korban outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So this is all background for the coming Mishnah, and the Mishnah states, if somebody makes a statement that I accept upon myself to bring a korban oila, of course it goes without saying that Yakuvena Bamikdosh, he is obligated to bring a korban oila in the Beis HaMikdosh. And if he offered up this korban in Chonyoy's house, in Chonyoy's Beis HaMikdosh, then Lo Yotzei is certainly not fulfilled his obligation of bringing a korban oila, because this is not a korban oila at all, this is bringing a korban outside of the Beis HaMikdosh, which is certainly not a valid way of bringing it. And as a result, he is still obligated to bring a korban oila in the Beis HaMikdash. And as well as that, the Mishnah doesn't say, but he would be liable to kores for bringing a korban outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Now what happens if his original vow, he said that I'm accepting upon myself to bring a korban oila, she'akuvena beveis Chonyoy, that I will bring it, I will offer it up in the house of Chonyoy. Even in this case, says the Mishnah, she'akuvena beMikdash, he's obligated to bring it in the Beis HaMikdash. Because we look at the main statement which he was saying, which was accepting upon himself to bring a korban oila. That which he added on at the end, saying that he was going to bring it in Beis Chonyoy, we look at that as a smaller detail of that which he is accepting upon himself. And since that particular detail cannot be, because a korban needs to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash, so that detail becomes irrelevant. However, the Mishnah says, interestingly, if he did bring this korban in the building in the Beis HaMikdash of Chonyoy, then Yotzah, he has fulfilled his obligation of fulfilling the vow. And the reason for this is because we don't look at the last part of his statement as totally irrelevant, but it is rather interpreted to mean that if he ends up killing this animal, because bringing it as a korban in Beis Chonyoy is certainly not a valid way of bringing a korban, so essentially you're just killing the animal. So we interpret that part of the statement to mean that if he kills the animal, then he will be exempted from his obligation to bring it as a korban. And that is why, if he brings it as a korban in Beis Chonyoy, so he's essentially just killed the animal, and is therefore no longer bound by his original vow. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon says, Ein zay oila, this is not considered a korban oila at all, and his entire vow is not relevant. Rabbi Shimon does not look at the last part of his statement as an additional detail, but he uses that to define and understand the entire statement which he said. And since you cannot bring a korban in Beis Chonyoy, so his entire vow becomes irrelevant and not valid. On a similar note, says the Mishnah, if somebody says Harini Nozer, I am accepting upon myself to be a Nozer. A Nozer is a type of person which the Torah says if he accepts upon himself to be a Nozer, so he's prohibited in certain things, for example, drinking wine, becoming impure, he can't cut his hair, and he can accept upon himself to be a nozer for a certain amount of time. And at the end of that period of time, he shaves off all of his hair and brings certain karbonis. So the Mishnah says, Yigalach b'Migdosh, he needs to go through this process of shaving and bringing the karbonis in the Beis HaMikdosh, meaning the karbonis needs to be offered up in the Beis HaMikdosh. V'im gilach b'Beis Chonyoy. But if he went through this process of shaving and, more importantly, bringing the karbonis in the, so to speak, Beis HaMikdosh of Chonyoy, then lo yotza, he has certainly not fulfilled this obligation, and he would need to bring the karbonis again in the Beis HaMikdosh. In addition, once again, he would be liable to kores for bringing karbonis outside of the Beis HaMikdosh. Now, if in his original vow to become a nozer, he said that I'm going to become a nozer, but she'agalach b'beis chonyoy, he added that he's going to go through this process and bring the karbonos in beis chonyoy. Once again, that part of his statement is looked at as an additional detail, and since that part cannot be, because a nozer is obligated to bring karbonos, and karbonos needs to be brought in the beis hamikdash. So the law is that he is still obligated, yegalach hamikdash, to go through this process of shaving and bringing the karbonos in the beis hamikdash. That having been said, if he did shave and bring the karbonis in Beis Chonyoy, then Yotza, he has fulfilled his obligation. Now in this case, it's a bit more difficult to understand, because we can't interpret his statement to mean that if he ends up killing the karbonis, then he'll no longer be bound by his vow to bring karbonis. Because in this case, it's not his vow which obligates him to bring the karbonis, rather it's the fact that he's a nazir. Once he becomes a nozer, so the Torah obligates a nozer to bring karbonis at the end of him being a nozer. And he's not able to exempt himself from the obligation, from that obligation, which is part of what the Torah itself obligates a nozer to do. So if so, how does he end up not being obligated to bring karbonis after offering up these animals in Beis Chonyoy, which is certainly not a valid way of bringing karbonis? So the Gemara explains that we're talking about somebody who lived near Alexandria, near Beis Chonyoy, and it was a much greater effort for him to reach the Beis HaMikdash. And because of that, we interpret this additional part of his statement as being a condition that if he ends up not going to the Beis HaMikdash, then he's actually not becoming a Nozer at all. Rather, he's making a vow to be prohibited by the same things which a Nozer is prohibited from. That he's making a vow not to benefit from, not to drink and consume wine, and not to shave his hair. But not as a nozer, but as somebody who makes a vow not to do something. That also obligates one to keep to his word. Now, if he ends up going and bringing the karbonis, he makes the effort to go to the Beis HaMikdash, then it becomes apparent that he really intended all along to be a nozer. And in that case, he's a real nozer, and the karbonis are the karbonis of a nozer. But if he doesn't go to the Beis HaMikdash, then we interpret this additional part of his statement as saying, because I don't want to make the effort to go to the Beis HaMikdash, all I am accepting upon myself is the prohibitions of a Nozir, without actually becoming a Nozir who is going to be obligated to bring Karbonos at the end of that period. Now all this having been said, once again Rabbi Shimon argues, and Rabbi Shimon says that he's a Nozir, he's not considered to be a Nozir at all, and his entire vow is invalid, because Rabbi Shimon looks at the entire statement, including the end of it, not as an additional detail which is being added to his main point of becoming a nozer, but rather the end of his statement is coming to define and help us understand the entire statement. So he's trying to become a nozer who's obligated to bring karbonis in Beis Chonyoy, and that doesn't exist. And because of that, his entire vow becomes invalid and irrelevant. Continues the Mishnah, Kohanim sheshimshu b'Beis Chonyoy, Kohanim who served in Chonyoy's Beis HaMikdosh, Leishamshu b'Hamikdash v'Yerushalayim, they were forbidden to ever again serve in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Ve'ein tzorich loymai ledavar acher, and it is needless to say that if they served for the sake of idolatry, if they offered sacrifices for the sake of idolatry, then all the more so they are certainly forbidden to ever again serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Ach lo yalu kohani abomis al mizrach Hashem b'Yerushalayim, but those kohanim who brought karbonis on private altars outside of the Beis HaMikdash, and they did this for the sake of idolatry, they shall not come up to the Mizbeach of Hashem in Yerushalayim, ki im ochlu matzis b'soich acheihem, except that they will eat loaves among their brothers. This is referring to loaves of karbonis mincha, and the same applies to other karbonis. And the Mishnah explains that they have the status of hayhem kebali mumin, like a kohen who has a wound, who is also not able to perform the service, but cholken v'oichlin. They do take a share of the karbonis, and they're able to eat the karbonis just like the other kohanim, those parts of the karbonis which are given to the kohanim to eat, avalo makriven, but they may not offer up and perform the services themselves in the Beis HaMikdash because they become invalidated for that by performing service of bringing korbanos for the sake of idolatry or in Chonyos Beis HaMikdash. Mishnah Yud Aleph, the final Mishnah of the Masechta, ends up on a very positive note. Ne'emar ba'ulas ha'behema, the Torah states, it is said in the Torah when talking about the korban olah of an animal, a bigger animal such as a sheep, which is brought as a korban olah, ish ha'yirach nicheach, that it is a offering on the fire of the Mizbeach, reach nicheach, it gives a satisfying aroma. So to speak, it gives pleasure to Hashem, it is considered to be acceptable by Hashem. And of Olas Ha'oif, regarding the korban olah of a bird, which is a much smaller and less expensive korban, it also says the same thing. It calls it an ish ha'yirach nicheach, an offering on the fire, which gives a satisfying aroma. Uva mincha, and also regarding a korban mincha, which comes from flour, which is even cheaper, it also says ish ha'yirach nicheach, it is an offering on the fire, which gives a satisfying aroma. To teach us that both somebody who gives a lot and somebody who gives a smaller amount, if he's less wealthy, if he is not able to contribute that much, if he does give that which he is able to and does it for the sake of Hashem, then that is what is considered to be satisfying for Hashem. As long as a person will have his intentions that he's doing it for the sake of Hashem, to fulfill the will of Hashem, that Hashem commanded one to bring a korban, he gains satisfaction, whatever that means, from us bringing korbanos, and that is the intention which one comes and approaches bringing a korban with, then even if one is not wealthy and not able to bring a more expensive korban, it is still considered to be equally as satisfying for Hashem. Solik Maseches Menachos, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov.
Maseches Chulin contains 12 parakim, and the subject matter is the preparation of non-korban meat. Chulin refers to something which is not holy, meat which hasn't got the sanctity of korbanos, and the first part of the Masechta talks about the process of shechita itself. Shechita is slaughtering the animal in the particular way that is required in order for the animal to be eaten, the meat to be eaten. And an interesting thing about Maseches Chulin, and how the parakim are arranged, is that there are many parakim in the Masechta which are their own topic in and of themselves, but each perek is an aspect which involves the preparation of meat, or restrictions involved in that. For example, there's a perek which is dedicated to the prohibition of slaughtering an animal and its child on the same day. There's a perek dedicated to the prohibition of eating meat and milk together, and so on and so forth, each being different aspects of chulin meat, non-sanctified meat. Now, the first two parakim of the Masechta talk about the actual process of slaughtering the animal. This process is called shechita, and the truth is it is a mitzvah to slaughter the animal in the correct way. Though we have a tradition coming from Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai of how exactly the animal needs to be slaughtered. This process is not explicitly explained in the Torah, although the Torah does say, v'zavachta mibekarcho mitzaynecha, you shall slaughter from your flock, from your animals. And later on the Torah says, kasher tzvisicha, like I commanded you. And this is a reference to the tradition which we have from Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, that Hashem commanded him and explained the process of shechita, and that has been passed down from generation to generation. And in short, the requirement of shechita is that a smooth knife be used to cut through the neck of the animal in a particular area of the neck, and the windpipe and the food pipe, which are known as the kone and the veshet, these two pipes need to be cut through with the smooth knife, or at least the majority of both of those pipes. And the truth is, for a bird, it's enough to cut through just the majority of one of the pipes. But we're going to talk about a regular animal for now, which requires the majority of both the windpipe and the food pipe to be cut through. And this needs to be done in one single motion. If one stops in the middle of doing it and then carries on, the shechita would be invalid. Now, any animal which dies without receiving shechita, or if it dies and has an invalid shechita, there are five different main invalidations of the shechita if it's not done properly. Then the animal gets the status of a nevela, which is firstly forbidden to eat, and as well as that, a nevela is also a source of tumah, of impurity. Now the Masechta opens up by elaborating on who exactly is fit to perform the shechita. Hakol shechatein, anybody can be the one to slaughter. The Gemara explains this coming to include other cases which aren't necessarily obvious. For example, if somebody is known to be an expert in the laws of shechita, however, we've never seen him slaughter before, and there might be a concern that he's a bit squeamish and he won't be able to take the sight of the blood whilst he is slaughtering it, and perhaps he might end up messing up the slaughtering or stopping it in the middle and then carrying on, which would invalidate the slaughtering. But the Mishnah is coming to tell us that as long as we know that he knows the laws, we don't need to be concerned that will happen, and we can even ideally give him an animal to slaughter. Ushchitoson kashera, and the slaughtering of anybody is considered to be valid. Here the Mishnah implies that we're talking about someone who ideally we shouldn't give the animal to him to slaughter, but if he did it, it would be valid. And the Gemara explains that this is talking about somebody who we don't know whether he is an expert in the laws of slaughtering. So ideally one should not give him the animal to slaughter. But if he did do it, then we're able to check him afterwards and examine whether he indeed does know the laws. And if it emerges that he does know the laws of slaughtering, then his slaughtering would be valid. Chutz, except for the following people: Mechiri Shoto Vakoton, a deaf and dumb person, or a total fool, or a child, since they have not got a sufficient level of understanding. There's therefore concern, Shamaya Kalklu Bishchitoson, that they might come to mess up the shechita, they might invalidate the slaughtering. And in general, even if they did it, it would be invalid. The reason why the Mishnah is implying that it's only a concern at the beginning, before they do it, that they might end up messing it up, is because of the following case of the Mishnah, where it would be valid once they do it. If any of these three people who are mentioned slaughter the animal whilst other normal adults who do have a proper level of understanding are watching over them, in that case, then, even though still ideally it should not be done, their slaughtering would still be valid, b'di'eved, which means once it has been done, it is considered valid. Even though ideally it shouldn't be performed by them, even in this situation where somebody else is looking over them. Next, shechitas nochri, the slaughtering performed by a non-Jew nevela, would give the animal the status of a nevela, meaning the shechita is invalid. When the Torah talks about the requirement to slaughter the animal, it says v'zavachta v'ochalta, you shall slaughter it and eat it, which implies that you're able to eat only that which is slaughtered by somebody who is commanded to slaughter. If the mitzvah of slaughtering applies to him, then it would be a slaughtering which makes the animal fit to be eaten. But otherwise, the slaughtering would be invalid, so for a non-Jew, if the non-Jew performs it, it will be invalid. And since it has the status of an avela, it is a source of impurity. If somebody carries it, even without touching it, just by carrying it, he would become tome, impure. Continues the Mishnah, Shechid Balaila, one who slaughters an animal at night when he can't really see, he only feels around where exactly the animal is, and the same applies to a blind person who slaughters the animal. Ideally, once again, this should not be done in case they come to mess up the shechita and cause an invalidation. However, if they did do it, shechitas and ksheira, his slaughtering would be valid as long as they check in the morning to actually make sure that it was slaughtered in a valid manner. Hashechit was Shabbos of Yom Kippur, one who slaughters an animal on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur, which is forbidden, even though he becomes liable by his life, the punishment for performing the shechita on Shabbos is death, just like whenever one violates Shabbos or Yom Kippur. Nevertheless, that's in terms of his prohibition, but the slaughtering itself, shechitas kashera, it is valid, and the meat of that animal can be eaten, because it is the opinion of at least this Mishnah that one is permitted to benefit from a form of work which is performed on Shabbos, even if it was performed in a forbidden way. And it could be this is only true if he did this unintentionally, he didn't realize that it was forbidden to slaughter on Shabbos, for example. In such a case, it would be permitted to eat that meat once Shabbos has gone out. Mishnah Beis, the previous Mishnah talked about who and when it is permitted to perform shechita, to slaughter the animal, and this Mishnah talks about what can be used, what type of knife needs to be used for shechita. The main requirement is that it be a smooth knife without jagged edges. And if a knife with jagged edges is used, then the invalidation is called ikur. Ikur is when the two pipes, the kone and the veshet, the food pipe and the windpipe, are cut through with something which has jagged edges as opposed to smooth edges. So then it says, Ashechid magal yod, one who slaughters the animal with a hand sickle. This is a type of implement which has two different sides. On one side of the blade, it is a smooth blade. On the other side, it's got jagged edges. So ideally, it shouldn't be used at all. But if one did use it and slaughtered it using the smooth side, then it would be valid. But sir, if you use the sharp stone, a flint, if it's attached to the ground, so it's invalid. One is not able to use anything which is still attached to the ground or to a body in order to slaughter. And if you've taken it out of the ground, then it's actually permitted to use. The Mishnah is talking about a case where you took it out of the ground and then you put it back in the ground. So, technically speaking, it's not considered to be something which is literally attached to the ground, but because of the similarity to something which is stuck to the ground and considered a part of the ground, so it is ideally forbidden to use such a stone, but if you did use it, it would be valid. Uvukone, and if you use a reed, once again we're talking about a reed which has been taken out of the ground and put back in, but it hasn't yet taken root again in the ground, and therefore, once you did do it, shechitas kashera, its slaughtering would be valid. Hakol shechatin, anybody can slaughter, lo'olam shechatin, and you can always slaughter at any time. This is essentially repeating that which was stated in the previous Mishnah about who and when the slaughtering can be performed. And the Gemara goes to a number of cases which the Mishnah here is coming to include. And now the Mishnah adds, uvakol shechatin, and you can use anything, any type of blade, to slaughter the animal. This is the focus of this Mishnah. Chutz, except for magal kotzir, a sickle which is used for harvesting, because it has jagged edges, v'hamageira, a saw, v'hashinayim, the teeth of an animal whilst they are attached to the animal, because since there is more than one tooth, so we look at it as if it's got jagged edges. And the truth is, if it only had one tooth, then it would be able to be used. That's v'tzipayren, a nail, this is considered to have the invalidation of something like something which is attached to the ground. Just like that can't be used, so too something attached to a body cannot be used. The body of a person. And the reason for the invalidations of the other things, other than the nail, is mipneshein choinkin, because they, so to speak, strangle the animal. The point is that the windpipe and the food pipe are not cut through with a smooth blade, and we are going to understand that this is referring to the invalidation of ikur, when the two pipes are cut through using something which is not a smooth blade. Now, the sickle, which is the tool which they would use to harvest, it had jagged edges which pointed in one direction. And generally, if you use that, it will be invalid, like the Mishnah just stated. However, if one slaughters using a sickle for harvesting, and he sort of pushes the knife in a direction going away from him, the edges pointed towards the handle of the knife, which was towards him. But if you would slaughter using the knife, pushing it away from him with that sort of motion, then you would not be using the jagged edges to perform the slaughtering, and therefore, technically speaking, it should be valid. However, because it is extremely similar to a case where you do it in the opposite direction, midrabbanan, we view this as an invalid slaughtering, and Beis Shammai Poisin, Beis Shammai invalidate the slaughtering totally, such that we give the status of a nevela to the animal. It's not only forbidden to eat it, but it will also become a source of impurity. However, Beis Hillel Machshirin, Beis Hillel say that it is valid. Although Beis Hillel agree that it's forbidden to eat it, midrabbanan, they hold that it's nevertheless not considered to be a nevela totally, and it would therefore not be a source of impurity. And the Mishnah ends off with him echliku shinehan, if they removed the teeth of an animal and smoothened it properly, harihi kasakin, then it would have the status of a regular shechita knife, which would be valid for slaughtering.